Hello, I'm Eddie Merckx. Welcome to the VeloCast.
Welcome once again to another edition of the VeloCast. My name is Scott.
And I'm John.
Stage 13 then of this year's Tour de France saw the riders reach Revel, and even though we predicted a day for the sprinters, it was Alexander Vinokourov who took everyone by surprise to take the victory.
Hey, no, be fair, I said that somebody could have a wee breakaway. There might be a wee breakaway because there were hills involved. So, you know.
Breakaway normally, wait a minute, breakaway normally denotes a group, surely.
No, of course not. You can have solo breakaways.
Yeah, but you specify that it is a solo breakaway there, whereas breakaway, just the word in and of itself, tends to denote, as I say, a group. So you're anyway, not getting this one, Galloway.
Vino did what he did. You know, he was a feisty Kazakh. I was convinced that the sprinters teams were going to hold it back because Balan and his lovely teeth had taken off up the hill, you know, 10k from the finish or whatever. I actually was working that BMC so hard, I feared the bottom bracket shell was going to snap off.
Snap, yeah.
But Vino, he was a man on a mission today after yesterday. I mean, he tried hard to win yesterday, and today nothing was going to deny him. I mean, his performance reminded me very much of, you know, the famous Lance cyclocross stage. He just took off and nothing was going to stop him. You know, he was a determined Kazakh. And to be fair, he deserves some credit. You know, it was a brave, brave win, you know, with the sprinters chasing him down. And as he himself said in the interview, I knew the sprinters teams were chasing me, so I pressed really hard on the pedals.
Well, that's that kind of technical minutia there.
Brilliant tactical analysis.
which we really appreciate from him. It actually reminded me of the Vinokourov of old, and that's not necessarily a good thing.
Well, to be fair, the one thing that I've noticed with all the riders today, be it Bert or, I mean, to a lesser extent, Schleck, but Vino as well, is when they're working hard, they do look like they're breathing through their arse. I mean, it's not the kind of effortless... You remember Greg LeMond was talking about having to work out when he could have a drink?
Yeah.
Because he was so breathless in a climb. There's an element of that. You know, it's a pleasure to see these guys looking like they're actually working hard. And that, I mean, that was something Vino, you know, the cheeks were drawn back, he was puffing away. And he was, you know, he was riding on willpower a lot of the time, I think. But whatever we think of him in the past, I mean, as Fun Run Roby said, he's an ex-shifty-eyed Ribena boy. You've got to give him some credit for today's performance against a peloton that clearly wanted a, you know, a sprint finish. So, you know, hats off to him.
Yep. It struck me how quickly he has been kind of rehabilitated in terms of the public, because if you cast your mind back to the early part of the season and his first few races, he was booed at every opportunity.
Well, make no mistake, he's not rehabilitated in my mind. I mean, I'm being very diplomatic here.
Well, I was going to say, if I'm being honest, I didn't get as excited today seeing him attack as I would have had it been the vast majority of the rest of the peloton. In fact, when Thomas Vogler tried to take off in pursuit of him, I was really rooting for Vogler to catch him.
Yeah, but let's be blunt. You know, he's done his time, he's back in the peloton, and we've said time and again, you know, if you serve your sentence after the, you know, under the current rules, you deserve to, you know, to have a blank slate. You've done your time, you're back in the peloton. We don't admire him as much as a rider as we did, you know, before he was done for having God knows whose blood his own, or, you know, his cats or whatever in the Tour when he was excluded. And I mean, I think that was part of his motivation. It must be a big Mark Cavendish two fingers up to the ASO today on Vino's behalf.
I mean, I'm not trying to kind of paint this, as we've said time and time again, but dislike for Vinokourov, or lack of interest is probably closer to the truth in his winning or losing, isn't so much the fact that he's a former doper or former convicted doper, is more along the lines of I just didn't like the rider. I'm sorry. And I've not really liked him since the T-Mobile thing, you know, going way back to attacking Jan Ulrich.
Aye, I mean, exactly. I mean, he's just a fill and beep of your own choice. I just didn't like him, which has nothing to do with him being a doper.
Absolutely. You spotted, kind of sticking with the Astana thing, you spotted an interview with Contador.
Well, it was actually an interview in Eurosport, and I've got to say, I haven't had people ranting at me about how good James Richardson and the bloody studio crew at Eurosport are. I've been watching them, and they did two things today. One was they had a really good interview with Contador, which essentially boiled down to, people keep asking me why I chased Vino. It's a stupid question. I'm after the yellow jersey. So, I mean, he's clearly, he learned a few lessons at Astana last year, and he's looking after his own back. And I've seen some tweets where people say they've lost respect for him or they don't like him as much. But actually, for me, it's boosted his esteem, or my esteem for him a wee bit, because we're finally seeing some steel behind that baby face. You know, it's not just his legs. He's coming out as a proper character now, and I quite like to see that. And the other thing Eurosport did was, in the prelude to the Pyrenees, they did a beautiful wee montage with Raymond Poulidor and Merckx and Pantani, and a really kind of a bloody awful cheesy song on top of it. But it brought a tear to my eye, realising we're entering now one of the classic arenas of the Tour de France. Oh, Phil Wiggett, watch out. Classic arenas, these are the hills of France, blah, blah.
He would make a fortune if he had some manner of copyright over these. You do know that.
No, I really would. And I'm gagging for the next few days now. I mean, we had a great time in the Alps. We've had a kind of wee lull with some interest in racing. But now, you know, the bullshit stops. The legs have got to do the talking.
Well, we'll get to that in a moment. As Vinokourov took the win, Mark Cavendish took the sprint for second ahead of Alessandro Petacchi, just 13 seconds back. Now, Petacchi's third place on the stage was actually sufficient for him to get the green jersey back from Tor Husshoft.
I hope they're washing it while they're swapping it back and forth. It's a great green jersey competition, this. I'm loving it as much as the GC, actually.
Yeah, Husshoff himself, I think he said he started his sprint too early and came in 8th place.
Well, I thought he changed his name to Renshaw, because I think Cav used him as his lead-out man.
Well, I think a lot of people were a wee bit concerned, or had expressed concerns over, oh, well, how will Mark Cavendish fare without his lead-out man today? I don't think, as much as I respect what Mark Renshaw does, I think Cavendish has the legs to go past anybody.
Ah, he's in form now. You know, they're spinning well. Petacchi, having in 2003 held the green jersey, he quit the race. But now he says he really regrets doing that, and he's going to stick to Paris and try and win the green. And that would be a fantastic bookend to a good career for Petacchi.
Absolutely. We've got to go right back now to the start of the stage, and one Lance Armstrong falling off again.
Well, actually, it's hard not to talk about Lance, but we really shouldn't be talking about him a huge amount, because he is just finishing up in the bus. And I mean, my worry is, I said to you when we were talking beforehand, I think he's saving his energy for one, you know, last great hurrah in the Pyrenees. But he looks frankly disinterested, and that's supported by the fact that he fell off while the race was still neutralised.
Yeah. I actually tweeted at that point saying, is Lance Armstrong riding this tour well drunk? Because he doesn't seem to be able to stay on a bike for any length of time.
I think now it's just a lack of attention. I mean, there was some bad luck, and I think there were some errors made by the fact that he was really forcing himself and, you know, pushing the ragged edge of his form to stay up before Ramaz, for example. But now I think it's just lack of attention. And if he's not going to contest the thing, he should just go home. I mean, I'm not saying that in a bad way, but one of the things about that montage from Eurosport, which was, it wasn't moving, but it was quite poignant, was there were loads of shots of Armstrong in his prime. And before I'm accused of biting the fanboy towel again, whatever we think of Armstrong, he was a force of well, maybe not nature, but a force of something, which was incredibly impressive to watch. And what we're seeing today makes me think, you know, before all the subpoena crap that's going to, you know, start in the next few weeks, it's maybe time to preserve the legacy and just step off the bike.
I saw, before you start crying there, I saw a very funny tweet today, came via Heidi Swift on Twitter, saying that, although it was a retweet from her, saying there should be an old Codgers jersey to give Lance and Andreas Clodden something to do, to which I replied, yeah, but Alessandro Pataki would probably win that at the moment anyway, so.
No, he absolutely would. I mean, if Armstrong is going to go out with a great hurrah and do something in the Pyrenees, great. If he's just going to trot around to the finish, he's just a distraction, and he should go home and, you know, set out the doormat for Jeff Nowitzki.
Yes, well, the reason I kind of brought this up, and is you're right to say we shouldn't spend too much time on somebody who's sitting in, you know, 12th, 30th
place. Well, in the bus, effectively.
Yeah, exactly. I saw somewhere in the past day or two that Radio Shack are now concentrating solely on the team competition, the team race. And what kind of struck me about that is, well, A, they've got no damn choice but to do that. But do you think Radio Shack, the sponsor, and all the other people who sponsor the team are going to be happy with that?
Well, to a certain extent, yes. Because, I mean, Lance is getting the media attention one way or another anyway.
Yeah, but do you really... I mean, all the TV coverage we've seen of Armstrong over the past couple of days has been a very sorry-looking Lance Armstrong with a wry smile on his face, soft-pedalling at, you know, l'arrière du peloton, or falling off. So it's not exactly the image that you want to be kind of portraying for your brand.
I don't know. We don't have Radio Shack here in Britain. I suspect you could have somebody riding in the Lantern Rouge position and it would increase their dynamism. But yeah, they signed on for Lance. As long as Lance is in the telly, they're going to be happy.
Okay, and on a similar theme then, Edvald Boasenhagen finished fourth on the stage today behind Calvin Pataki. In a stage that I think a lot of people would have fancied him for the win.
I think Sky are now starting to underperform seriously.
Well, that was where I was kind of going with that. First of all, the fact that Boasenhagen, as I say, if you were going to pick a stage that he would have gone for, it probably would have been today.
But no, you would have expected him to do exactly what Vino did.
Yeah, exactly that, yeah. So my question really here was Team Sky's performance thus far. Discuss.
I'm not sure it's possible to discuss with it being slightly litigious.
Now, that hold on a minute. There is some inference there that you've got some inside knowledge, which I know fine well you don't, so...
My thought on this, and I mean, you're a bugger for bringing it up, because we've talked about it before the show, but I'll get vaguely stuck in anyway. Team Sky, incredibly impressive in the first week. I mean, Geraint Thomas was a revelation. Wiggo did well in the cobbles. You know, there were endless numbers. Boasenhagen himself was up there. Now...
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you. You say that Wiggins did well in the cobbles, but he was absolutely atrocious in the prologue.
Oh, yeah, just weather. No, it wasn't the weather. He was rubbish. But you can blame the weather for that. I mean, you can say there was an element of bad timing. Now, as a Grand Tour progresses... And Chris Boardman was a perfect example of that. I mean, there's some early pictures of Boardman climbing with Inderain on, you know, the highest mountains in the Dauphiné, for example. And where he really suffered, and if anybody's clean, it's Chris Boardman. I mean, I'm completely certain he was as clean as a whistle through his entire career.
Hmm.
Where he said he suffered was when he started having trouble recovering, when other people were recovering rather better than he expected. And as we're getting to, you know, to the business end of a Grand Tour, I'm pretty sure Brailsford would, you know, take somebody outside who was doping and hit them over the head with a shovel until they weren't part of Sky anymore. I mean, I think Brailsford has an ethic which is, you know, there's no question about his ethical purity when it comes to stuff like doping. So, although I think it's the cleanest tour for years, I think there's a reason why Sky are underperforming. And I think that's as far as I'm prepared to go just now.
Okay. I mean, I wanted to highlight it because there has been, Well, we go right back to last year and the very, very glitzy launch. And I don't know whether this was coming from the team themselves or Dave Brailsford or indeed Sky, the sponsor. They brought a whole heap of pressure down upon them by that kind of glitzy launch, the like of which a lot of journalists said that they hadn't seen, you know, anything like it.
Yeah, but look at the history of the thing. I mean, Brailsford is the guy who essentially, along with Pete Keane in the early days, masterminded the ascent of the British track team. Now, the thing about track cycling is it's completely controllable. And although there's a big element of recovery with things like multiple pursuit rides in a single day, it's easily manageable with intelligent nutrition, training and that sort of thing. And then the roadside started taking off, and where you really noticed it was on, you know, they were taking part in shorter stage races. Now, when you get to the biggest arenas, there's an argument that intelligent nutrition and clever training aren't enough, and we may be seeing that here.
So just, I don't want to put you on the spot or anything. But
I'm beating about the bush furiously.
Never has a bush been more beaten about than this. I'm not wanting to pin you down on anything, but what it kind of sounds like you're saying is
Sky are clean and everybody else is helping themselves.
No. In terms of Sky themselves or Dave Brailsford, has he now taken on too much? Is a road team in a 3-week Grand Tour a step too far for someone with Dave's background in track cycling?
No, I don't think it is, but I think it's a step too far if you're not prepared to play by the rules everybody else is playing by.
Okay, right, before we end up in court, let's look quickly ahead to tomorrow's stage and get some thoughts on the races we head to Axe Trois Domaines.
I really don't want to talk about that. And the reason I really don't want to talk about it is the last time I watched the Tour in the Pyrenees, I was in the Porte de Palière, which is the, you know, the big climb before the finish tomorrow.
Yeah,
and it was one of the best days of my life, and it's just depressing the hell out of me that I'm not there.
Well, this is going to make for a good podcasting, isn't it?
Tell you, it's a brutal climb. I mean, it's going to split it apart before you even get to Axe Trois Domaines. And, you know, we saw Saxobank, for example, en masse, falling off the front quite early on that final climb today. And my first inference was, oh, they've not got any form. But of course, as soon as I thought about it, they're saving themselves for tomorrow, you know. The big boys have to come out and play tomorrow. It's going to be brutal. And we'll actually find the answer about Armstrong. You know, he's either up for the game or he's in the bus tomorrow. There's no middle ground. So it's a Sunday, which means I'm off, which is fantastic. I don't think my family will be talking to me because I'll be sitting in front of the telly all day. But can't wait. Literally cannot wait. I'm gagging with excitement.
Yes, I think a lot of the questions over Andy Schleck will need to be answered tomorrow as well, because as we've said all along, he needs to attack. He needs time and no more perfect a place than tomorrow.
That was actually my favourite quote from today was Andy Schleck, or it might have been yesterday. When they said, you know, what do you think of Contador taking 10 seconds out of me? He went, just shows he's nervous.
Yes, okay. Well, you keep telling yourself that, Andy. And I think that's probably all we have time for today. Thanks so much for listening and staying subscribed. You can contact us by visiting our website at velocast.co.uk, where you can also find out how you can donate or subscribe to the show. If you've enjoyed this show, please consider leaving a comment or review in iTunes, as this really helps with other people discovering it. And while I'm on that point, thank you for everyone that has done so far. Well, we hope you can join us tomorrow following the stage to Axe Trois Domaines for another edition of the Velocast.